And so as we continue looking at this and how Jesus was functioning through all of this, we want to look at and ask the question, look for the answers to the question, how do we get real like Jesus? Okay? That's the question for us today. As we're going to try to finish up this part of our study. So how do we get real like Jesus? How do we get to be authentic? How do we operate from a position of authenticity rather than this idea of putting on a show and trying to impress people with what we know, what we have, and all of those kinds of things? Well, we start out with I think the first thing that we need to really pay attention to is that we have to understand what Lynn Anderson calls or refers to the weakness of strength. Okay? The weakness of strength. What are the liabilities of operating from a position of strength? We need to look at that and understand it. We typically think of that whatever you're doing, you got to operate from a position of strength. You got to show your strongest side. You got to, you got to really make sure that people understand who you are and what's all about, and it's all about the strength and the power and so forth. But what are the liabilities of operating from that kind of a position as we're dealing with people? What kinds of things do you think might get in the way? Any thoughts on that?
Ego.
Okay. Ego certainly is a big danger, isn't it?
Right.
Okay. I think certainly all of those things. But let me share with you some thoughts that and a lot of this I'm going to share with you today. I'm just going to kind of make a general statement here. Okay. A lot of these are quotes and things that Lynn has in his material. I don't know how better to say what he's saying here, so I'm not going to try to, change around. He talks about the idea, says, when we hold power over another person, we're never sure how genuine our relationship with that person is. Think about that. When you're in a position of power over someone else, okay, there's always be that lingering question, how real is the relationship that we have? Are they hanging around me simply because of who I am and the position I have, or whatever? How genuine is that relationship? Okay. Any thoughts on that at all?
Okay. Example has power over, let's say, myself. And they have that power, we allow them to have that power over us. We can never really feel free until you get that taken care of. Because example about to be in the position. They can get to the point where they abuse the power, which is definitely not good. And sometimes a question like that is behind a hard down, because sometimes there are folks that just don't, they got to be here, and they don't want to pay. They really don't want to release the power at all. And look at who I am and what I am, what I have, and these kind of things. One thing I've always tried to do is just, I don't want to be genuine, but be kind to other people. Everybody is not on the same effort. Yeah, higher echelon and the same economic scale. But I've always been a person, I don't care if you're a millionaire or not, I think I hold a conversation. But you know, I shouldn't let that hopefully influence the way you
think. I think a lot of times when we're, you know, in the position of people that are power, it's real easy to get intimidated by that, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so forth.
Laura?
Think about it this way. You know, you probably heard the expression, if not said it, you know, in your time before. You know, money is power, right? So, you know, the person who, you know, comes into a lot of money, maybe they won the lottery or whatever it is, what oftentimes happens when someone suddenly comes into a lot of money? Yeah, all of a sudden they got all these friends, you know, and so forth that, you know, they've never even seen before. You know, and so again, it comes to that question. The issue is, you know, how genuine are the relationships that you have with people when you, you know, are in a position of power over them. Another aspect of this, another liability that he talks about, he says, when I operate from a position of power or psychological advantage over someone, I rob that individual of personhood. And they become a tool for me to control. When we're exercising control and power over someone else's life, you know, in a lot of ways it does take away some of their individualness and their dignity and so forth. And, you know, people are oftentimes intimidated by that power, as we said, and so they become afraid to say what they really need to say or think or whatever, and there's a lot of control that can be done, and even oftentimes manipulation of people. So what does that then say, if that's the kind of thing that's going on, what does that say about, again, relationship? Okay, is that the kind of relationship that that we really want and need to have with folks? A third one he talks about, he says, when I attempt to control from a position of power, God gets dethroned and I take charge. Okay. Think about, you know, again, power. I've got power over people. You see, then oftentimes it becomes all about me. Okay. And God starts being pushed out of the picture more and more and more. He says also, ultimately, that can lead to a depletion of influence. Right? As we build ourselves up, and this oftentimes, we've seen this in the news, you know, here with different people and all, we can... oftentimes we build ourselves up, we can pad the resume or the stories for more impression on others. And when the truth does finally come out, then it can be devastating. Think about, again, sometimes some of these politicians, you know. You know, I don't remember the guy's name, the one in Michigan or wherever, that recently, you know, come to find out that, you know, he had, you know, plagiarized a major portion of his... dissertation and so forth of military academy, which he, you know, received, you know, his degree and so forth, and he since has dropped out of the race because, you know, of that, of what he had done. And you know, there's and this seems to be happening a lot with a lot of different politicians here, like the lady down in Texas, you know, that's kind of similar thing, had all this stuff on her resume. She, you know, got this degree and that degree and so forth. Come to find out, she hadn't even finished school, the schooling, you know, and so forth. And so, you know, there's this quest for power, and to be able to operate from a position of power sometimes, you know, causes people, they've got to have this power. And especially once you get a little bit of taste of it, you got to have more, you start doing things to kind of build and secure that power base. And sometimes the things that you're willing to do to control that are the very things that are undermining that foundation you're trying to build. And so that that's another liability. Another one is that when we're operating from this position of strength, we often think that we need something bigger than reality to do God's work. Right? Sometimes people tend to, you know, look at the situation they're in and go, well, you know, I need to be able to do this. I've got to have this. I've got to do that in order for God to be able to use me. We tend to look at other people and what they're doing, and we compare ourselves and say, well, look at what they're doing. If I could do something like that, then look at what I'd be able to do. But until I get there, there's not a whole lot that I can do for God. See? Because we're looking at it from that lens of, you know, that the world looks at things with to say, the more powerful I am, the stronger that I am, the more useful I am. Okay? And the reality is, God does not need our strength in order to use us. What does He need? Our will, He needs that.
Needs our obedience.
He needs us to be weak. Remember what He told Paul when Paul was complaining about his thorn in the flesh? What was God's response to him? My grace is sufficient for you for what? My power is made perfect in weakness. See? And so when we're operating from this position of strength, then we've got it all backwards. Because we're trying to say, I've got to be strong, I've got to accomplish this, I've got to have this and be this and so forth, so that God can then use me, when God is saying, I need you to let me be the power source. And I can take your weaknesses and make them work for me. You see, but that's part of the problem when, as we said earlier, we start getting stronger, then we kind of take and put God off the throne and we put ourselves there, and we're not focusing on what God wants and what God can do and so forth, you see.
But I was just thinking about Moses. He was supposed to go back and lead the people that were going to follow him. And who am I? He's still like this. I don't have any sign of power.
But God gave him what he needed, didn't he? Well, here's an opportunity for us to do a kind of a self-evaluation to determine, you know, am I trying to operate from a position of strength, and is that perhaps causing me some problems? There's five questions that Lynn gives for us to really take a look at this. Let me just read these. If you want to write them down, and I really suggest that we're going to just kind of take a little bit of time here. Let you think about it a little bit. Don't necessarily have to answer or what have you, but I really want you to think about these. Write them down. Spend some time with it. Okay? The first one, he says, do I try to project more strength or claim more power than I really have? Okay? Do I try to project more strength or claim more power than I really have? Put ourselves in that position where we're trying again to make people look at us and think that we have more than what we really do. Whether we're talking about, you know, degrees or accomplishments, you know, and so forth. We've had the resume. Is that something that, you know, that you need to really look at in your own life in relationship with other people? Number two, do I feel a need to communicate personal achievements in order to be a legitimate and comfortable player in a relationship? Okay. Do I feel a need? What's the matter? Well, I'm going to read it several times. I think y'all got that after the first one. I'm not expecting you to write it all down. Besides, I thought you took shorthand. What are you complaining about? Okay, here we go. Do I feel a need? I'll read it slowly. Okay, part two. Do I feel a need to communicate personal achievements in order to be a legitimate and comfortable player in a relationship? I don't think he intends the word player to be used the way it's oftentimes used today with people, you know, talking about, well, he's a player, you know. I don't think that's his intention. Just a participant is probably a better way to look at it. Okay? Anybody need me to read that again? Do I feel a need to communicate personal achievements in order to be a legitimate and comfortable player in a relationship? All right, next one. Do people around me feel that I will listen to them if they have a problem? Do people around me feel that I will listen to them if they have a problem? I got that one? All right. Next one's kind of long. Break it down. But this one is, I really want you to listen to this question, okay? What percentage of my time am I available to people who want to talk to me but who are not, quote unquote, useful to me? Okay? What percentage of my time am I available to people who want to talk to me but who are not useful to me? Do I need me to read that again? All right, last one. Can I name a person who was served by me in the last few days? Name a person who was served by me in the last few days. Again, we're talking about relationships. The Jesus touch, includes all of our relationships that we deal with people. Related to him or not. Those are some tough questions, aren't they? But I think that they're really important questions for us to take a good, honest assessment of how we operate with other people? See, are we using the Jesus touch, or are we, you know, just really kind of doing more of the worldly thing? You know, where we're operating more from a position of strength, and that's really what we want to find out. And I think these questions are great questions for us to really look at and see. Maybe I'm operating more from a position of strength and power than I realize.
I found the questions real easy, but the answers are tough.
Yeah, that's what your teachers would say about you in school. The fourth question there that's a tough one, isn't it? The one that says, what percentage of my time am I available to people who want to talk to me but who are not useful to me? But let's make sure before we move on, do we understand really what that question is all about? When we're talking about people who are not useful to us, what kind of folks are we talking about? Okay. Telemarketers. Yeah. I think that definitely those folks would be annoying. Okay. But I'm not sure though, Gene, if that's really the kind of people that we're talking about here. What are we talking about? We're talking about people who are not useful to us. When we're thinking about it from the standpoint of operating from a position of strength, isn't that? Yeah. How can they help me advance, you know, or you know what have you? That I don't see them as really offering much. They're not bringing much to the table, as the saying goes. So how valuable then is that person to me?
For us, there's a line in a writing called the Desiderata, says, be tolerant of the dull and ignorant, for they too have a story to tell. It's not so much that people are dull and ignorant. Everybody has a story to tell.
Yeah.
And they all feel like they've got a story to tell.
Yeah, absolutely. And see, I think when we look at people in terms of their value to us, okay, in other words, what they can do for me, okay, then again, we go back to that idea of what I'm doing. It's all about me and advancing myself and the power and so forth. And we're really, you know, delegitimizing that person. Since they're not valuable to me, they don't really matter. Okay? Again, look at it from the Jesus perspective. You look at different people that Jesus encountered and dealt with. How many of those people were really, quote unquote, useful to what Jesus was trying to do? Look at the woman at the well. See? I mean, how was she in her situation useful to Jesus, you know, in terms of accomplishing his mission and so forth? Really wasn't. It was he who was useful to her. You know, so when you look at it in that kind of a way, the Jesus touch says, look, don't look at it from a position of power or strength and what this person can or can't do. You look at them as a person, as an individual, a person who has a story to tell. So, then you begin to find out, how useful are you to that person? what can you do, man, to make a difference in their life? And that's how Jesus looked at things. The other side of this coin that we really need to look at, you know, the one side is, you know, in order for us to get real like Jesus, we really need to understand what happens when we try to operate from this position of strength. But the other side of it is, what happens when we understand the strength of weakness? Okay? Instead of, along with understanding the liabilities and the weakness of strength, what is the strength of weakness operating from that position of vulnerability and so forth? Lynn gives six powerful pluses of operating from a position of vulnerability and authenticity. These are short. Okay? If you want to write these down, they're just short little statements here. Okay. In fact, you can just write down vulnerability. Okay. And then I'll give you these things. Vulnerability, first of all, promotes honesty. Vulnerability promotes honesty. Thus, vulnerability inspires trust. Thus, vulnerability lowers defenses. Thus, vulnerability melts hostility. Thus, vulnerability puts listeners at ease. Everybody got all of those? Okay, I'm going to read through them one more time, all right? Okay, vulnerability promotes honesty. Thus, vulnerability inspires trust. Thus, vulnerability lowers defenses. Thus, vulnerability melts hostility. Thus, vulnerability puts listeners at ease. Last one's a little bit longer. Thus, when we relinquish our position of strength, we become more teachable ourselves. When we relinquish our position of strength, we become more teachable ourselves. Now, you know, go back to the story of the woman at the well and look at these different characteristics here when we're looking at things from the, and we're trying to understand the strength of weaknesses, and look at how Jesus interacted with this woman and look at what the results were. Did Jesus operate with her from a position of strength or from a position of vulnerability? What do you think? Did Jesus, when he's, you know, interacting with the woman at the well, did he operate from a position of strength or from a position of vulnerability or authenticity? Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. He said marry the well and being willing to talk to a Samaritan woman. So yeah, he was leaving himself wide open and vulnerable. Right? But what did that promote from this woman? Conversation, but not only conversation, but, you know, there was some honesty that was shared there, wasn't there? There was trust that was gained. Okay? Remember another one of those characteristics that melts hostility. Vulnerability melts hostility. Remember when the woman first, when Jesus first asked her to give him something to drink, what was her initial reaction? Yeah, I mean, was that hostile or what? See? How is it that you, a Jew, could ask me, a Samaritan woman, to give you something to drink? And Jesus continues operating from that position of vulnerability and that hostility. We see the defenses are being lowered. That's another one of those characteristics. And the hostility starts to melt. And she becomes more at ease. Talking to Jesus. So by the end of the conversation, what happens? One of the things that we talked about when we were studying that, she went there to get water, right? What did she do? She left her water jar there. The very reason she came there, she left it, and she went back to the town and said, come see a man who's told me everything I've ever done. Could this be And that's an example of Jesus, the Jesus touch, operating from that position of vulnerability and authenticity. See? Being real with someone. Jesus didn't start out by the conversation by saying, okay, now let me make sure you understand who I am here. Okay? Talk to her about what her needs were. All the time, beginning she's thinking physical needs, he leads her to understanding of her spiritual needs. And that's what happens when we operate from that position of vulnerability. When we understand the strength of weakness, vulnerability forces us to be authentic. Okay? And authentic Christianity creates an abiding faith. Okay? And when we're trying to operate from this position of strength and power and kind of put on and make people think we're stronger than we really are, then there's no real authentic Christianity and faith there. Those things get in the way of that. When that's happening, we don't feel a burden than to feel like we have to drive the best or wear the best or the latest, because our self-image ultimately comes from God, not from what other people think of us. And we truly are able to be vulnerable and authentic. Question then comes with this: how do we become more authentic? Let's finish up with this, okay? How do we become more authentic? First of all, you've got to start with the heart. Okay? That rhymes, doesn't it? I'm a poet, didn't know it. He'd show it, they're Longfellows. Anyway, I won't charge any extra for that. Okay, you have to start with the heart. The heart is the center of who we are as God's people. And if it doesn't come from the heart, then it's not worth much. Over and over again, we see Jesus in dealing, especially with the religious leaders of his day, confronting them about heart problems they had. Okay? And he wasn't discussing it from a physical standpoint. He wasn't talking about clogged arteries and things like that. He's talking about spiritually, their hearts were not where they need to be. Okay? concerning those religious leaders. At one point, Jesus said, well, did Isaiah say of these people, they honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. So if you want to be genuine, you want to be authentic, you want to be real, then it's got to start from the heart. Okay? The second thing that's got to happen is we've got to pay the price, we've got to pay the pain price. Okay? And Lynn says, in terms of how he's looking at that, he says, you've got to be willing to get down where people are hurting and where you can get hurt. Pay the pain price. Are you willing to get your hands dirty? I think a lot of times we're much happier and much more content to quote-unquote serve by simply writing a check. That's nice and clean and, you know, and so forth. You know, I'm not going to really miss the money anyway. Makes us feel good. But that doesn't create authenticity and vulnerability.
We've got to remember where we've been. We've got to remember where we have been in situations where we're sinful, situations where, you know, we didn't show compassion. But, you know, none of us have been a perfect one. And we can remember where we came from. We can relate to what we've been. I don't care how rich you are or how poor you are. We all have these things in our hands that when someone comes to us, we can relate to them and we know that we know better than they are. And that way we can listen and, as you said, we become vulnerable.
How much do you think Jesus, you know, paid the pain price in dealing with the people that he dealt with? You know, that's the Jesus touch. The payoff, okay, of us operating from this position of weakness, what is that? What's the payoff of this authenticity? Well, if you want a little bit of a glimpse of that, turn over to Acts chapter 1, and let me get somebody to read verse 14 for us. While we're doing that, Ray, you had a comment?
Yeah, I wanted to use an example. I was with Brandon Wilson, and anyway, they had one of the supervisors, well, the head man, John Smith, came over. And, you know, people kind of, you know. But anyway, the department manager, and he's over top of everybody, and, you know, he's all down on his knees, looking up under the machine. And the supervisor, he told the supervisor, you can't see it from up there.
Right.
He dressed up in his white shirt, just get in on his knees, just like the head man did.
Yep.
He didn't mind getting in on his knees. Yeah, he was like, that makes me a humbling experience.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think that's a good statement, too. You can't see it from up there.
Yeah.
You got to get down where people are. No? Okay, who's got Acts chapter 1, verse 14? Somebody read that for me. That's not the right word. Acts chapter 1.
Oh, I had
14. And verse 14.
They all contended with one accord. Is that correct?
Yep, that is.
They all contended with one accord in the prayer and supplication with the women and Mary and Mother Jesus.
Notice that? He's talking about there, you know, after Jesus had ascended back to heaven and the disciples all gathered together. Go back up to verse 12. They returned to Jerusalem from the hill called the Mount of Olives. When they arrived, they went upstairs to the room where they were staying. And those present were Peter, John, and James. Who are those three guys? the three of the inner circle of Jesus, right? His three closest friends, all right? So they were there. James and Andrew and Philip and Thomas, Bartholomew and Matthew, James, son of Alphaeus, and Simon the Zealot, and Judas, son of James. So we got all the disciples are there, right? Okay, then he says, they all joined together constantly in prayer along with the women. Who's that? Okay, Mary Magdalene and the other women that were part of the entourage that, you know, that, that traveled with him and so forth. And Mary, the mother of Jesus. Okay, so they're all there. And then three words. His brothers were there. Okay. What did it say at the beginning of this story as we were looking at it about his brothers? They didn't believe him. They didn't believe him. But yet through the Jesus touch, what happened? They were there right along with the others. They believed. They came to a point that they believed. One of the reasons why I like little statements like that, that you can read that, and how many times have you just read that passage over and over again and never really noticed the significance of those three words. Okay? And with his brothers. Didn't believe him. Jesus touch. Authenticity. Okay. Vulnerability. Learning to operate, learning to interact with people from that position and understanding the strength that there is in weakness. Again, remember, it's not our strength. It's God's strength. But the only way God's strength can really work in us is for us to acknowledge our weakness. And you allow, as I said earlier, for God's power to be made perfect in us through our weaknesses. Right? Thank you all very much. That's all we have for this. I want to encourage you to spend some time between now and next week. John chapter 8, we're going to look at the Jesus touch as it relates to the woman caught in adultery. All right? Thank you all.
Thank you.